Markets and governments around the world are making their way through uncharted waters today. A world financial system whose bedrock security, U.S. Treasury bonds, no longer enjoys a unanimous AAA credit rating. And officials at Standard & Poor's, which downgraded U.S. debt on Friday, followed up today with downgrades of the credit ratings of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, farm lenders, 32 banks, organizations that depend on federal dollars. President Obama spoke moments ago and responded to the downgrade.
What we need to do now is combine those spending cuts with two additional steps. Tax reform that will ask those who can afford it to pay their fair share, and modest adjustments to health care programs like Medicare.
Let's bring in Rick Klein, senior Washington editor for ABC World News and host of the network's political webcast, Top Line. Rick, in a minute, we're going to talk with John Cassidy of The New Yorker about the downgrade and what it means financially. But what does this mean politically?
This is now going to be the hot football that's going on. It is either the Obama downgrade or the Tea Party downgrade, depending on your perspective on this. And we've seen the president and the White House since Friday night take aggressively on S&P and really question their motivations in all this and criticize them for making a political judgment. Meanwhile, politics is being played. You've got some Tea Partiers even going so far as to cheer the fact that there was a downgrade on Obama's watch because they feel like it was something that was warranted and that they've been warning against for some time. And from the other perspective, you've got Democrats in the White House saying that this was just pure political motivations and an attempt to embarrass the president. But this is the kind of thing that's going to have long-lasting political damage potentially for the president if it's not something he's able to inoculate himself from.
Well, but Rick Klein, on the other hand, if you go deeper into the S&P report and go beyond the headline that, as the S&P said, the government is dysfunctional and they want more long-term cuts, if you go beyond that headline, we're told by conservative analysts like Peter Morici that, in fact, S&P specifically cites Republicans for standing in the way of tax reform. And it would seem like what we heard was President Obama seizing on that, saying, in fact, I see this as a wake-up call, and the wake-up part is to get tax reform.
That's right, although it's not something that Republicans are likely to budge on. But from the perspective of a ratings agency, they don't care about how you close the deficit really as much as the fact that it is closed. And if it's revenues that are part of it, then I think they're happy to see that as part of the discussion. But realistically, that's not going to fly with Republicans. That's not the political environment we're in right now. The president said that he's going to put forward some of his own recommendations in addition to helping the Special Super Deficit Commission conduct its work. But this is going to be now a hot topic through the remainder of this year, probably through the remainder of this term for the president, something he's going to be dealing with constantly on the reelection campaign at the very least.
Well, to talk more about the politics, again, we're going to talk about the finance in a moment. Some of the fingers pointing on the Republican side, presidential candidate Michelle Bachmann, one who says this downgrade happened on the president's watch. Senator John McCain saying it happened because the president failed to lead. But again, it would seem, Every economic analyst that we spoke to last week said that they felt there was too much cuts in spending short term, not enough of a padding put in through spending or tax reform. And now S&P, again, when you look deeper, seems to say the same thing, that you had people blocking things that were needed in the short term. So and we have the president getting up and saying the same thing he's been saying for months. At some point, when you have things like the polls that came out last week showing how few people in the U.S. support the Tea Party, does that have to shift at some point?
You'd think at a certain point it does reach that threshold, but right now we're seeing the Tea Party stronger than ever, and their point of view.
Do you mean dug in more than ever?
I think both dug in more than ever and wielding more political influence than ever. The very fact of that agreement that was reached last week, the fact that they feel this is something that fuels their argument, whether or not that's exactly what S&P says or not. The Tea Party is at a big moment for its own politics. Now, it may go too far, and that's the big danger for them as they move into the presidential year. But at this moment, the Tea Party that didn't even exist a few years ago created this entire moment over the debt debate and now is able to declare some modicum of victory and validation in this S&P report.
It'll be interesting to see what the polls say this week, which pointed finger over the weekend worked. The John Kerry, a senator from Massachusetts, who called it the Tea Party write down, or in Michelle Bachmann, who blamed it on President Obama. Meanwhile, stocks have dropped today about 400 points, but despite the downgrade, investors pulling out of stocks are flocking today to buy Treasury bonds. Now, you know, analysts are saying that this can underscore another claim the president made today, which is that investors still have faith in U.S. credit. They're buying those Treasury bonds like crazy today.
That's right. And it doesn't really matter what a ratings agency does by itself. It's only the impact, and that's as much weight as you want to give to them. As you mentioned, there are two other ratings agencies that still give us top billing in terms of risk, and a lot of other smart people that say there's zero chance of default for the U.S. government. So it is also a question of where else does the money go if you want security and safety, regardless of what S&P says in this. So they're under a lot of pressure. Obviously, they've come under a lot of fire in the last couple of days over all of this. But the immediate impact, you're exactly right. It's not that people are flooding or fleeing the U.S. Treasury market because they think they're not going to get paid. It's that they're looking for other alternatives, and there is some panic in the market today for sure.
Well, and President Obama also, in his defense, it would seem, quoted Warren Buffett as saying that he would, if there was a quadruple rating, A rating, that's what Warren Buffett would give to the U.S.
That's right. And he said we're still a AAA country and will be regardless of what a ratings agency says.
Rick Klein, senior Washington editor for ABC World News, host of the network's political webcast Top Line. Just briefly, we've got about 30 seconds here, Rick. I was going to say, what's the buzz in Washington? But it's sort of empty there.
It is a pretty empty Washington. Most of the buzz in New York today, but I think a lot of folks just waiting to see how the president handles this. This was the first time that he has weighed in directly on this and criticized S&P. He didn't do so by name, and that's something a lot of people are talking about. He doesn't want to be seen as coming in and really offering sour grapes.
Yeah. Well, some of these lawmakers go out to those fairs and eat those unbelievable chocolate marshmallow things that they eat at the fairs in August. They'll be hearing about this as well, I'm sure. Rick, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Well, let's now bring in New Yorker reporter John Cassidy. His latest book is How Markets Fail, The Logic of Economic Calamities. John, welcome.
Thanks for inviting me on.
And you write today that while Republicans and Democrats are excoriating the S&P downgrade of the U.S. rating, we heard over the weekend they made a mathematical error. It's all about the Tea Party, or it's all Obama's fault. You applaud the decision, the downgrade. Why?
Well, I think, S&P's downgrade was ultimately a sort of vote of no confidence in the U.S. political system. And I think that was justified given what we've seen over the past 6 months with the debt ceiling crisis. I mean, after all, we did come within 24 hours of a technical default. It wouldn't have been at the end of the world. But one of the major parties in the country showed itself willing to take the U.S. economy up to the brink. And these ratings agencies are paid to assess that sort of probability. One of the things they look at when they assess the likelihood of a company defaulting is how well the political system is working. I know people like to set it to, separate finance and politics, but actually they're very inextricably linked. And that's what S&P said in their downgrade. They said this is not a judgment on any particular level of debt. What it is, it's a vote of no confidence in the American political system. And I think from what we've seen this year, that's justified.
But John, I want to talk more about that. But they also seem to say, or at least what was cherry-picked from the report and what we seem to hear all weekend, is that S&P also said there weren't enough cuts. So riddle us this, because last week we heard almost across the board that economists were unhappy with the debt ceiling deal because it had so many cuts, so little revenue raised, no tax breaks eliminated, no spending. And they were saying for days on this program that just like in FDR's time, you don't cut spending when there's a fragile economy. Then along comes S&P and says, we're going to downgrade you because you didn't cut enough.
Right. Well, two things. One, I don't think S&P was saying there weren't enough cuts. They were saying there's not enough deficit reduction in the long term. Now, you can cut deficits in two ways. You can either cut spending or you can raise revenues, i.e. increase taxes. What we found in the debt ceiling negotiations is that the option of raising taxes was put pretty much completely off the table.
I'm just going to jump in to say that you and others like Peter Morici, the analyst, have been pointing out that deep in the S&P report, in addition to pointing to political dysfunction, they also, fingered Republican reluctance to raise taxes. And the report apparently goes on at some length about how different taxing scenarios would affect the situation. Now, Peter Morici is critical of the S&P report because he says it doesn't talk about cuts to Medicaid or Medicare or health care spending. But apparently the S&P report does say taxes should be a part of the equation going forward.
Yes, it does. I mean, they, as I say, they're not passing judgment on any particular deficit reduction strategy or any particular number. What they're saying is look, the country, the U.S., faces a long-term fiscal crisis. The reason why economists confuse people over this is they don't make clear we're talking about the long-term in the short-term. In the short-term, I agree with most economists that what we need is not more deficit reduction, but a short-term stimulus because it looks like the economy is going into a double dip. What we're talking about in terms of a debt downgrade is what's happening over the next 20, 30, 50 years. Mm-hmm. And if you just look at how the U.S. deficit looks over 20 or 30 years rather than over 2 or 3, it looks very bad because we've got all this entitlement spending, we've got a bloated Pentagon, and at the same time we've been cutting taxes for 10 years. That just doesn't make sense financially. Something's got to give eventually, and what's given in this case is, you know, is the AAA rating, right, according to at least one of their agencies.
I was going to mention, you go out of your way to point out something our listeners know, they've heard you before. You're not a fiscal hawk. You are, in fact, arguing for a jobs program that would require spending. But would you address the question that many are asking, why should we even listen to S&P? Again, you say that they're performing a public service, that adult supervision was needed. These are your words. Paul Krugman says they have no credibility. They helped cause the housing crisis. They signed off on those lousy financial instruments as they took money from the firms that created those instruments. So, you know, what about that sense of, you know, people don't know who to trust anymore?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, I pointed out in my article, which you said, so I think I was even stronger than Krugman, I said that they prostituted themselves during the credit bubble.
You used the word whore, yes.
Yeah, which they did. You know, that's clearly true. But, you know, this is a different downgrade. It's a different team at Standard & Poor's. And what they're trying to do, obviously, is restore their credibility. I mean, the problem, what they were criticized for last time, and it was totally justified, is that they gave AAA ratings to securities that didn't deserve a AAA rating, and then they didn't downgrade them in time. What S&P is saying here is, look, here's a security, U.S. Treasury bonds, which in our opinion doesn't deserve a AAA rating, and here's the reasons for it. And I think they make a reasonable case. Other ratings agencies disagree, so the U.S. has still got a AAA rating from two of the agencies. But S&P has put more focus on the political system. And as I said, I think anybody, any objective observer or even near objective observer watching the U.S. political system in the last 6 months would say it's not functioning very well. The sort of ability to get anything done seems to have disappeared. At least one side, the Republicans, shows no willingness to compromise whatsoever. And on the other side, we have a Democratic president who doesn't seem to be able to sort of exert his authority and force them to compromise. So, you know, that's a political system which is paralyzed and is not working very well, and that's what's led to the downgrade.
You list three things that you think the government can do long-term that could give us a fiscal adjustment, starting with curbing military spending. Just could you tick those off?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a few things. You know, it's a matter of credibility here. I think the most important thing is a willingness to consider sacred cows. So let's look at three sacred cows. One would be military spending. We've had an enormous increase in military spending since 9/11. And
close in bases, maybe?
Yeah, close. We've got more than 800 bases around the world. We have 50,000 troops in Germany. We still have a military which is constituted to fight the Cold War 20 years after the Cold War ended. So I think we could, you know, reduce military spending and sort of rejig the Pentagon without doing any long-term damage to the country. Number two, entitlement spending, obviously a third rail of American politics. If you just look at the long-term debt projections, most of the debt is due to massive increase in Medicare and to lesser extent Social Security, but mainly Medicare spending over the next 20 or 30 years as the population ages and Medicare spending explodes. That needs to be addressed at some point. Everybody's known that for 20 years, but nothing's been done about it. And then the third one, which has become a third rail in recent years, is tax revenues. America is a very lowly taxed country compared to the rest of the world. The overall tax burden is about 25% of GDP, I think, on most recent figures. Most European countries are around 35, 40%. Some Scandinavian countries are 50%. America can afford to pay more taxes. So if you look at if the political system showed itself willing to even touch these three things, not necessarily very radically, but a modest increase in taxes, a modest reduction in military spending, and some significant entitlement reform, I think the markets and the rating agencies would look at it and say, well, at least this is a serious effort to get America's house in order. And I think the ratings agencies, or certainly S&P, would ultimately restore the AAA rating.
And again, some of the suggestions you make, indexing the retirement age to life expectancy.
Well, I don't want to I don't want to back any particular one. I think
right.
that's for a matter of debate. But, I mean, that's just one which seems to be sensible. I mean, you know, when these systems were set up, Social Security and Medicare life expectancy was much lower than it is now. There are arguments against it, equity arguments, because rich people live a lot longer than poor people generally, so they would benefit disproportionately, perhaps. So maybe there needs to be some adjustment made in to take account of that. But the important thing is to put these ideas on the table and with a sort of open mind say, yes, you know, we're willing to do this, we're not willing to do that, but we realize we can't just have open-ended spending requirements.
Well, and perhaps let the Bush tax cuts expire once the economy gets back on its feet for everyone, not just the rich. I'm just saying...
Obama's got himself in the situation where he's basically calling for tax increases on people who earn above $250,000 a year, and I agree with him on that. But the fact is there have also been quite big tax cuts for, you know, people below that in the last 10 years. And have they done the country a lot of good? I mean, what good has the Bush tax cuts done the country? It doesn't seem to me to be any stronger than it was before they were introduced. So I don't think it would be anything too terrible to return the overall tax burden to what it was during the Clinton years when we had a very healthy economy. So, yeah, I'd be all in favor of repealing the entire Bush tax program.
Well, so what happens now, John Cassidy? We're told that interest rates may go up. One of our listeners wrote and said, but doesn't that mean that banks make more money? However, after thinking about it, a colleague said, well, wait a second. My dad in retirement might finally get something from his interest-bearing instruments, which have just really dropped. So what is the sense of what will happen and what it'll mean?
Well, it's hard to say. Obviously, we're getting the immediate market reaction today. And so far, in fact, interest rates have fallen further. As you pointed out earlier, people are reacting to the news by buying more U.S. Treasury bonds. That's because Treasury bonds, in a crazy world, even though they've just been downgraded, are still seen as one of the safest assets there is, and they're very liquid. So all around the world, we've seen another rush into Treasury bonds. Their prices have gone up. When bond prices go up, that means interest rates fall. So actually, I noticed that the 10-year note was at lowest level since the 1950s this morning or something. What that means for the man on the street is that he's going to earn even less, if that's possible, on his savings in banks and short-term deposits. So it doesn't seem to be any sign of higher interest rates in the long term. I mean, in the short term, whether interest rates go up in the long term, it depends on so many things that I think that's above my pay grade.
Well, by the way, John, just one quick question. We're coming up on our goodbye, but Scott Hughes also writes. You mentioned the bond markets. He writes, how does this plunge in stocks affect other bond markets? I'm sure he's meaning besides the Treasury bonds, municipal bonds, things like that.
Yeah, well, the Treasury bond market will be hit because Treasury bonds are priced off municipal bonds are priced off Treasury bonds, so that they will be hit. Corporate bonds aren't affected, and corporate bonds are also yielding all-time lows. But if you have your money in municipal bonds, you'd probably take a bit of a hit on this one. But the rates are so low at this stage anyway that a marginal move in either direction doesn't make much difference to the average saver. You're basically getting no money for lending short-term to the government at this stage.
And I guess short-term, we're all just holding our breath to see how Washington does respond to this S&P rating as they're putting together this super commission to try to find more cuts.
Yeah, I mean, the short-term reaction has been discouraging. I mean, we've basically been indulging in shoot the messenger, both parties and some of the commentators you referred to, rather than looking at the message of the downgrader saying, why should we listen to S&P? They're the guys who got us into this mess in the first place. I don't think that's a very encouraging reaction, but that's probably inevitable. The big question is what happens over the next 6 months, especially when this super committee comes back.
Yeah.
It's going to take a while to play out this story.
We'll talk to you then. John Cassidy of The New Yorker, by the way, also author of How Markets Fail, The Logic of Economic Calamities. Logic and economic, two words that haven't gone together a lot. John, thanks so much.
Thank you.